Book banning. It has increased by a third in the last year, according to the writers group Pen America. The American Library Association has dubbed next week Banned Books Week, and one book in the middle of this fray is the Pulitzer Prize-winning Mouse. It's a graphic novel, a long nonfiction comic book, about one man's Holocaust experience. The author, Art Spiegelman, spoke last week at a public library in my hometown, Arlington, Virginia, and I caught up to him just before that. Well, Art Spiegelman, thank you very much for taking the time.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
For those who have not read Mouse, your graphic novel, it unfolds on a couple levels. It's about the relationship between you and your father and his memories of the unspeakable horrors of the Holocaust and surviving the creeping influence of the Nazis. People selling one another out is just such a human story. When you were writing it, did you think about the audience? I'm asking because we're, of course, talking today in the context of banning books for children.
Yeah, well, I wasn't thinking about much of an audience at all. I was thinking of myself as an audience in the sense that I really had to understand how come I got born when my parents were both supposed to have been murdered years before I got here. And I just wanted to put that in order and understand it. So that was the project. It took a surprisingly long time, 13 years, to do it.
Why did it take so long? Were there just that many drafts, backs and forths?
For one thing, I didn't have a model of what it really would be to make a long comic book that was meant to be read and reread, so it doesn't just reveal itself and dissolve in your mouth as you turn the pages, you know? It's before the phrase graphic novel caught on, which is a good marketing term. I just thought of it as a long comic book that needs a bookmark. But that was the point, was to figure out how to tell a long story that has the complexity of some of the literature I've read and loved.
The context is you talking to your father and him delivering his memories to you. And, you know, you and your father are clearly different people, as you write in the book. What was his reaction to the product?
Well, you know, he never lived to see it completed, so he only knew it in progress. And I always thought that it was really about finding a place for him and us to sit at a table and not lunge for each other's throats after a half hour. When I finished interviewing him, I just say, let's do it again, because there's the stories that people can tell easily because they've kind of gotten them rememorized as story, and that's different than searching your memory. And by going over it again and again without it feeling like I was giving him a third degree, that's what the purpose was. Instead of a generation gap, we had a generation chasm, like he's born in a shtetl and Poland. I wanted to understand and get a context. And I also feel maybe I'm lucky because maybe he wouldn't have liked the way I portrayed him. You know, it's a much more of a warts and all story. Yes. And that was very intentional because most of the things I'd read tend to put the survivor in a kind of special light. You know, like they've gone through fire and have been cleansed, or they suffered and therefore they've become beatified. And that wasn't what I experienced, and I wouldn't have wanted to portray that because it would indicate that there was some purpose to this horrible bloodshed of those years. In fact, Holocaust, if you don't mind my interjecting that, it's one of the most terrible words I can imagine for what they went through. It means a burnt offering. My family wasn't offering itself up to anything. They were burned. It's some kind of crazy religious term. Shoah was good. The disaster was good. The genocide, which is the word that was invented at the time to describe exactly what was happening. But Holocaust, not so much.
You know, part of your novel captures this creeping fascism, people trying to survive. The Jews are portrayed as the mice here among the animals. Some of them are making accommodations to try to survive. But of course, the Nazis keep coming, and we know where it goes. And I just wonder, those warnings that are part of your book, if you think they're relevant today, how are they relevant today?
Well, I do think the story has, sadly, a lot of relevance right now. But mainly, it had to do with seeing how this was like boiling frogs very slowly in water, you know? So that step by step, the increments of how the final solution was put into effect, taking people ultimately out of their homes, putting them in ghettos, then making them, as you were saying, accommodate, turning on one another in order to provide fodder by being the Jewish police within the ghetto, providing people to go off to their deaths after. So I feel that what we're living through now is, I don't know if it's Nazism, but it's definitely some kind of autocratic impulse, let's say, an impulse to remove freedom of movement and freedom of choice from people, even though the people who seem to be doing that seem to think that they're actually have the rhetoric of, this is a blow for your freedom. You can't let anybody take away your right to be here. Like, they will not replace you. That kind of thing.
There's a particular twinge here, it seems to me. School districts in Tennessee and elsewhere are banning your book, which is a warning about the Nazis who came to power in part by banning books.
Absolutely.
And by burning books. I mean, how potent is the irony here?
Well, pretty potent, especially when you consider that also in the early 50s, there were book burnings of comics in America. There was a kind of hysteria about how comic books are ruining our children and turning them into juvenile delinquents.
You and your book, in a way, kind of regained some prominence when a school district in Tennessee decided it was going to discuss banning your book. And I was looking kind of quickly at the transcript of the school board or the conversation where they were talking about what the school board called something like unnecessary use of obscenity and nudity.
In one panel, my mother's lying dead in a pool of blood in a bathtub. It's rather, for what those words conjure up, it's a rather chaste image, but nevertheless, that was the female nudity, as opposed to talking about a naked corpse, which is a different thing. And dirty words were another one where I see her, I have a tiny visual of her slashing her wrists, and that was just a record of what kinds of turmoil I was going through after she died. And when I find out that my father had burned her diaries, which yeah. she always wanted me to have, I call him a murderer. Someplace there might be a in there as well, but it's hardly a blue streak of obscenities, and it's hardly about its nudity. The result was that I think this is why I believe I was just a drive-by shooting, you know?
What do you mean?
Well, a lot of the book banning that's going on right now has much more to do with race, with sexual preferences and, big quotes, deviancies from the cis norm. And for a long time, the anti-Semitism has dialed down. It's like we're almost like honorary white people. But it could be removed. You know, it's a provisional thing. And part of what made them uncomfortable, to your earlier point, probably has to do with they're seeing a kind of weird mirror of themselves, especially because beyond the book being about Jews and Nazis, the real story is about othering. But if the story is told with bad words or an image that they find too sexual, that's easy grounds to defend based on whatever precedents exist. And I think they were leaning on that, not because that's what offended them the most, but because that was the grounds on which they could just say, let's get it out of here. You know, like, we don't want to have to deal with this.
I guess I want to ask you about this internet age. I mean, as a parent, we know what our kids can see if they want on a phone, on a laptop during lunch period at school. And then we're in this national conversation about what books can exist at the library. It almost seems like this debate is a little pre-internet.
I don't know, because I think there's a real purpose to it. It's not just about Junior, shut your eyes. It's about something else. It's like these so-called moms for liberty and the other forces that are gathered together are interested in dismantling public education. And that's much closer to creating an autocracy. It's much easier to control illiterate people than literate ones. And I think the idea of making parents distrust schools as opposed to seeing them as an important funnel into being a socially engaged human in your society. And I'm afraid that that's where it overlaps with Mao's, that it has to do with watching step by step how corrupted powers like are abandoning the so-called cherished freedoms of America that they're ostensibly defending. And it's scary to watch.
Art Spiegelman, thank you very much.
Thanks. Thanks a lot.
The Pulitzer Prize-winning graphic novelist Art Spiegelman spoke to me last week in Arlington, Virginia.